Tony Simpson, Ryan Champion and Jack Bennion.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally. It's good to be back at episode 10, season 8. Technically our last episode of this particular season. There may be a bonus episode. I haven't quite decided yet, if truth be told. A busy show coming. We've got Martin Holmes coming up a little bit later on, sharing his thoughts, views, on not only the situation with Chris Meek, which I'm sure we're going to discuss yet again at the top of the programme, and also a few thoughts on Ypres and a few other bits and pieces. And then we're going to have Chris Rawls joining us at the end of the podcast, giving us a catch-up on ERC so far this season, and also what happened on Rally Cyprus. But as I say, normally, at this point of the programme, I'll say, on my left, hello, Ryan Champion.
Hello, go ahead, coming to me first. You were catching me off guard there, weren't you?
I know, I did it on purpose. And on my right, I'll say hello, Jack Bennion.
Hello, Tony Simpson and Ryan Champion.
There you go. Boys, it's are we all getting ready for our little holiday?
I'm not going on holiday.
Jack and I are actually going on holiday this weekend. We're not going on holiday. We're both working independently, but we're just going on holidays to the same place.
You're going to be in Ypres. You're going to be in Belgium. You're going to be living the dream.
We are.
Can I ask what your particular role is out in Belgium, Ryan Champion?
I am helping a friend of mine, Robert Woodside. He's doing the rally this weekend in his Euro 10, and I will be giving him a hand on the rally.
Can I ask you a question about what Robert Woodside is doing over there, please? It'll become apparent. Now, I know he's doing the rally. Is he doing this championship, which is the Tour of Europe Rally Series?
Yes, he's doing the TER series, and he started off with Rally Transylvania, was it? I think in Romania.
Dracula won that.
He's planning to do the TER series. He's taking it on an event by event basis, but the car's run by Van Heuvel in Holland, and they have a few cars doing the championship, and he's tagging along with them.
Well, there you go. Well, Martin Holmes is going to be talking about the TER series later on, so that's why I was asking you, see, I thought it was going to be relevant, and it was. Jack Bennion, your particular role over in Ypres, of course, will be covering the MSA British Rally Championship and, of course, MN's involvement with the Penistone Junior Championship. Are you excited?
Absolutely, yeah. It's one of the events at the top of my bucket list, so it'd be nice to sit them off. It seems to be ticking a gravel bucket list event off, sorry, a tarmac bucket list event off every year. Did Circuit of Ireland last year, which is one I've always wanted to go to, and now I get to go to Ypres, so I'm quite excited about that.
Do you know what, Jack? I made some notes, believe it or not. I do prepare for some of these podcasts, I really do. And I was talking about bucket list events and these things, and the ones that we all get passionate about, and iconic events and stuff like that. Is it just me, Jack Bennion? Right, and I'm going to ask Ryan as well in a second. Is it just me? Do our iconic events that we mention, are most of them tarmac?
Oh, that's a good question. From a personal point of view, I'd say no, because there's lots of gravel events out there and lots of kind of mixed surface events out there that I really have really enjoyed watching over the years, and you know, things like the Safari and Indonesia and New Zealand and places like this are all sort of iconic events to me. So no, I wouldn't say they're all tarmac, but you know, there is a I'd say it's probably an equal split, to be honest, 50-50.
Do you know what, Jack? I've got a great deal of respect for you. Do you want me to tell you why I've got a great deal of respect for you? Because not only did you answer the question really succinctly and really, really well, you didn't correct me on the fact that I called it the wrong name, the MSA British Rally Championship. Of course, it's the Preston MSA British Rally Championship, not the Penistone, because Ryan Champion just texted me to correct me.
Is Ian Campbell sat next to you?
No. It's Ryan Champion just correcting me by a text message.
It's all right. If Ian Campbell is sat next to you, he did a press conference in Ypres yesterday, and he did two types of translator, one for BS and one for Belgian. So it's he gets it as well.
Okay, well there you go. Right, is it just me? But do we seem to look at iconic events? Are they more tarmac events? Because whenever we kind of get excited, we go, "Oh, the Manx is an iconic event. Ypres is an iconic event." They always seem to be, you know, Monty iconic events. You see where I'm going with this?
There's definitely quite a few on tarmac. I guess the tarmac rallies tend to stay in a similar area, don't they, normally, anyway? I mean, obviously, Corsica goes all over the island and whatever, but Ypres is made by the fact that it's always been around that area, and the rally has remained largely unchanged. Monty's gone to different places, but Col de Torino is central to it. The Manx, obviously, it can't go very far. Whereas I guess some of the gravel events you know, have spread a bit further. But interested that Jack Benyon lists Indonesia amongst the iconic rallies of the world. That wouldn't have been probably in my top 10, actually.
Do you want me to tell you why he does that?
Iconic maybe wasn't the right word for that, but yeah. One of those events that I've always been interested in and always found really sort of intriguing as an event anyway.
Is it to do with the girls? No.
I wasn't going to be so sleazy, to be perfectly honest with you, Ryan Champion. I was going to say, due to the fact that it was always the trickiest event on the original Colin McRae game.
Got it in one. Well played, Tony Simpson.
See, there you go. There you go. See, Ryan Champion, finger on the pulse. Now, the reason why, again, you see, full circle, you could almost think this is planned sometimes. Boys, we got our Dirt 4s this week, courtesy of Codemasters. Now, in our little two-week window, we're all going to try and play it and set ourselves some challenges. Now, for those of you who signed up via various things that you can sign up and follow us on, but Patreon, of course, which is a way of you getting involved, and if you can afford to give us a dollar or whatever it may be, there's some people already done that. We really, really appreciate it. We do intend to promote it more. If you are listening, please log on to Patreon. If you can afford to give us something, great, but everybody that's logged on and gave us a little bit of something via Patreon will go into a draw for the new Dirt 4 game. We've got one to give away, so you've got 2 weeks to do that, and I'm not going to draw it until we come back after our little break. And in the meantime, both Jack, Ryan and myself will try and play it and try and set some times, and maybe we might put them out on the Twitter feed as well. There you go.
Just so I'm clear, Tony, is that Peniston or Patreon?
Patreon.
Ah, okay.
You Ellend. Anyway, right. straight to MN for this week, boys. I didn't say what you think I said, by the way. right. This debate and discussion still goes on from pretty much following on from our podcast last week. And thank you so much for all the kind messages we got who enjoyed the debate that we had. I think we all came at the situation with Chris from different angles. Jack, this week, you guys, I've kind of gone on with it. Robert Reeds, of course, done an excellent piece in MN this week with regards to his thoughts, with regards to what Chris maybe needs to do. And it's a very interesting angle he's coming at it.
Yeah, we've got a big hole spread on Chris May this week, which is quite interesting after the news last week, but it's interesting to see how the story is kind of developing and how it's moving on from where it's been previously. And Robert Reed was a kind of logical person to go to kind of work out a little bit about the psychological effects that Chris Meek's going to be under. You know, we talked a lot on the show last week, didn't we, about how Chris is going to feel when he gets to the start line in Finland, and you know, he's going to have to do a lot of work to make sure he's ready for that event. Robert Reed's one of the people we spoke to, and David Evans has also spoken to some of the key figures in WRC journalism to work out what the kind of feeling is across Europe as to Meek's drop into this event. So there's thoughts of lots of different sort of reputable journalists from around Europe, and there's also the thoughts of Robert Reed on the kind of psychological effects as well. So it's an interesting read, actually.
Right, I don't know if you've had a chance to have a read of it yet. I Robert's obviously experienced not only sitting alongside Richard and obviously the successes they had, and you know, the comparisons always made between the approaches that Colin and the approach that Richard had, both, you know, when they competed. Robert, of course, you know, moving on and working with the MSA and things like that, and certainly the sports psychology side of it. I think they've done some stuff up in Edinburgh when he first got involved with that in the university up there and things like that. Have you had a chance to read this piece yet?
I haven't. I've just scanned it. I haven't read it in detail. But like you said, it is interesting because Robert's seen the sport really from both sides. Obviously, he saw it from alongside Richard, who was a very analytical character, and put, you know, at the time when Richard was competing, pace notes were relatively simple, and yet Richard and Robert came up with this very technical pace note system. I mean, I still don't think there's many drivers in the world that use 10, as in 10 meters in their pace notes. Such a short distance, but Richard did, and they read the notes vertically down the page, and they put a lot of effort into pace notes, a lot of effort into developing Richard's style, and they really worked at it. And then, like you said, Robert outside the car is now involved with the MSA, with the FIA, with the you know, the various academies for the MSA for development of young drivers as well. So you know, he does have an interesting viewpoint.
Yeah. We've got Martin Holmes coming up, as I said, later in the podcast. He's got his thoughts on it as well. Now, always very, very interesting and different, you know, the angles that Martin comes at it. One thing that has been kind of mentioned in this piece, Jack, that David wrote is with regards to what Robert Reed was saying with regards to the change of co-driver that Colin went through. He's not suggesting, you know, that Paul and Chris go in their separate ways, but I don't know really. Is it different voice? It has been said before that, you know, drivers like Chris, very single minded, and that's what, you know, they're talking about the psychological thing there. I don't know. That's something that we didn't mention, of course, last week, but it has kind of gathered, you know, pace over the last 7 to 10 days. You know, would a different voice be helpful? What's your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's a logical person working through sort of logical reasons as to why this person's struggling. And obviously, one of the things to always consider when a driver's struggling is, you know, the relationship with the co-driver and how that works. And you know, I'm not sat in the car with Chris and Paul, and not sure how their sort of relationship works in the car. But when you're actually listening to the notes, you know, it's clear that Paul has done a lot of preparation, and they both watch a lot of video. Paul's talking a lot about little bits on the road. If you watch a lot of Chris's onboard, Paul knows what's coming up. Which some people would argue co-drivers should, but there's the specific rocks and things like that that Paul points out in onboard. So, you know, for me, I don't think there's any issue with, definitely not any issue with Paul's ability there. But maybe the relationship needs some work, you know, who knows. But for me, I don't think we'll see a change of and Chris and Paul, and Paul's very experienced and a very well-known and reputable co-driver. So the argument is, does Chris need some sort of change? And I think that's why people jump to talk about co-drivers is, you know, it seems to be the logical thing to change, doesn't it? You know, if you're a football team and you're conceding a lot of goals, then it's logical to get a new goalkeeper. And, you know, if a driver's crashing a lot, it seems logical that something's not working there with the co-driver. But, you know, for me, I'm not sure that's the issue in this case.
Right, do you think, you know, and one thing that Robert did mention in the piece that he's wrote here is with regards to, you know, maybe somebody, you know, spending some time with Chris, maybe, you know, maybe having a couple of days with the team in the workshop, or, you know, certainly having some time maybe with like a sports psychologist, that type of thing. Do you see Chris as somebody embracing that type of thing?
I think at this stage in Chris Meek's career, Chris will do whatever it takes to get his career, well, I don't like to say back on track, but to keep himself in a world championship drive. I mean, he's worked so hard, as we all know, to get his opportunity at WRC. And I think, yeah, I think he'll work with whoever, you know, whoever can help him to get the best out of himself. You know, nobody wants results more than Chris Meek does. So if he sees an advantage to it, then yes, I'm sure he'll, you know, he'll jump at the chance. It's like we discussed it at length last week, didn't we? You know, Chris certainly isn't blameless in this, but then nor Citroen either. So unfortunately, he's the one who is suffering from it. But you know, would he have had as many accidents in a car that's working perfectly? We don't know, do we? But you know, any help Chris can get, I'm sure he'll jump at it, because he wants to succeed like he always has.
Absolutely, absolutely. I want to kind of leave this alone now, to be honest with you. I think it's well trodden. Jack Benyon, you wrote your piece as you normally do, well, your little thoughts and stuff. And again, I'm gonna say it. Iconic event. Jack Benyon, Donegal. Now, you've shared your thoughts on this. Again, I was watching stuff coming in on Twitter and stuff like that, and I know we have a lot of Irish listeners and the guys at Pace Notes and stuff like that. I know you didn't cover the event, but certainly you've wrote about it this week. And the Irish tarmac series seems to be really, really gathering pace again now, doesn't it?
You know, that event's just, it is, as you said, an iconic event, isn't it? And one I wish I could go to every year. It's a fantastic event, and I spend hours afterwards. I've done it today, I'll admit, watching some onboard from the guys over there. And I don't think you can underplay the performance of Manus Kelly this weekend, who won the event. Technically, kind of three wins on the bounce now, because he won the event last year, and then the year before he won the national rally as well, which is probably one of the, I don't know how you would describe it, maybe as one of the hardest fought subcategories on probably any, you know, kind of UK or Irish event going. I think, you know, the pace of the tarmac championship modified guys is just incredible, and there's so many of them all fighting every week, and you see quite a few of them go off, and you know there's always a great battle at the front, and David Bowie won that event last year, which tells you everything you need to know about sort of the pace at the front of that as well. So Manus has gone through that, and then now driving a Subaru SRV Impreza and really delivering the goods again under a lot of heavy pressure from Donna Kelly, who was 2015 tarmac champion and national champion in the same year. So you know the pace up there is pretty fantastic, and Manus, he's done four or five events in the last 2 years, and two of those have been Donegal International wins. You know, when you look at the list of the winners of that event, that's pretty incredible to me.
I tell you the other thing as well, before I come to you, Ry, because I want to talk to you about this, obviously I do. One thing I wanted to do is mention the guys in the R2 cars, Jack. Very quick young men, Callum Devine and Marty Gallagher. Okay, you know, you look at the times, the results, you know, how far back they are compared to obviously the front runners, but to actually get those R2 cars into top 10 on an Irish tarmac ground is phenomenal.
Absolutely. I mean, if you look on paper, you know, there wasn't that many R2s in the event. If you consider sort of some of the, you know, the bigger championships around Europe and things like that, and maybe you wouldn't expect the Irish Championship to have so many R2s. But what you can do with the Irish Tarmac Championship is actually directly compare those R2 times to some of the other guys who are running a bit further forward. And if you look at the times of especially Callum Devine, who goes well at Donegal every year, and I watched some footage of onboard footage of him from last year from Knockalla in the wet, and the commitment of the guy is just outrageous. And you know, he was on it this weekend, and Marty Gallagher, you know, both those guys competing in the Junior British Rally Championship as well, and you know, they were both rapid all weekend. And if you compare the times to some of the Mark II escorts and some of the, you know, some of the kit that's out there in Ireland, the times are staggering.
Absolutely. Right. I always feel like we come to you when the word Subaru comes up. don't know why. Manus Kelly in this, you know, in my eyes, probably the last kind of successful Subaru. And I say that kind of with clenched teeth because it's the one, I think it's just before the hatch, the S16 version. They're still going out and they're still winning events over in Ireland. That must be spanning. God, it's got to be spanning probably nearly 30 years now. Subarus have been dominating over this.
Certainly a long time, yeah. Like you said, I mean, as soon as ProDrive started building customer cars, they were going to Ireland, weren't they? You know, starting with the legacies with the likes of Kenny McKinstry in the famous Caliber car, and obviously Bertie Fisher in the Tough Mac legacies. And then both drivers moved on to Imprezas. And then obviously since then, we've seen a huge influx of ex-work Subarus into Ireland, a lot of them through Derek McGarity, of course, the rally car dealer in Northern Ireland, and you know, a lot of them still there. And as you said, the S12 and S12B has been incredibly successful in Ireland and still continues to be.
Anyway, right, thank you for that, Ry. I feel like we go to you with these things and you give us a very clear-minded, very succinct answer on these things, where Jack and I would just be talking round and round in circles.
Tony, can I ask Ry a question very quickly?
You can ask Ry whatever you want. Apart from, if you're asking what he's wearing, that's highly inappropriate.
No, it's a very quick question that I hope Ryan will find sort of relatively interested to answer. But I find it really interesting that I mentioned Manus briefly there, and the fact that he won the event over the weekend. But you know, he's done a handful of rallies in the last year and a bit. You know, we hear so many drivers talking about how important seat time is, and yet Manus can rock up in Donegal and really compete for an overall international win on one of the most hotly contested tarmac events in Ireland or in the UK or even Europe in some people's opinion. So how important do you think seat time actually is? Because it seems to me that Manus is kind of proving that if you're committed and you write good pace notes and you're effective in that way, that, you know, it can work for you.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, clearly, like you said, he's not done an awful lot. I don't know what he did before the rally, but I assume he must have had a reasonable test before the rally to be on it straight away. I mean, obviously, what we do see is that the WRC cars are still a little bit faster than the R5 cars generally, but nonetheless, you know, Gary Jennings was out in a very similar car, and Gary's very, very quick and out regularly. So, like you say, he's clearly jumped in and gone very well very quickly. I think there's a little bit, I don't know. You can maybe tell me, Jack, but is it limited recce on Donegal nowadays? It never used to be.
No, I don't think they are.
Which if it isn't, you know,
there is anyway quite a bit before the event, isn't it?
Yeah, and again, I think that probably helps. You know, if it is still a free recce as it used to be, if you can make five or six passes or more, even in the old days of the Irish Tarmac Championship, you know, drivers were memorising every stage in Donegal pretty much, and that takes a lot of doing. So I guess a free recce obviously helps, but great result and all credit to him.
There you go. There you go. Have you got any other questions for Rai, Jack?
No, not this moment.
Rai, have you got any questions for Jack?
I've got any questions for Jack Bennion. You could give us an outlook currently, Jack, because we know you're on your mobile today. We don't know where you are. So what's your current outlook?
I'm in an alleyway. Don't make any jokes, Tony. I'm in an alleyway just off the main road in Richmond. As you can probably hear some sirens in the background there. I couldn't actually get one of our meeting rooms. They were all booked up today, so unfortunately I'm on my mobile and out in the alleyway so that the staff in the Autosport office don't get an insight into Absolute Rally before it comes out, so that it's fair to everyone, that everyone can listen to it at the same time and no one gets a preview.
Do you know what? I love that. Do you know what, folks? I'll let you in a little bit. Oh, it's not really a secret. We the three of us do speak to one another throughout the week, and we always use our initials. So it'll be JB, RC, and stuff like that. But I've just come to the conclusion I'm probably going to change JB now to TC, because I'm going to start calling him Top Cat, because he lives in an alleyway. There you go. There you go, TC. It's changed now. Listen, when are you leaving for Ypres, Jack Bennion?
Tomorrow sometime, or just before.
And Ryan Champion, when are you leaving?
I've got a very early flight on Friday morning.
Wow. Okay. I want to come to Ypres. It's an event that you did, right? Got to be nearly 20 years ago.
Yeah, a long time ago. And I was going to say first went to Ypres. That's not actually true. I think the first time I went, my mum was co-driving on the rally back in about 1991, I think. I first did it in 1996 when I think, as far as I know, it was the last time it was an official round of the British Championship, because in 1996 it was a round of the British Junior Championship. But like we said, it's a rally that, albeit it might have changed in its length a little bit, the character is exactly the same as it's always been. It's still got the same classic stages, still got the same cobblestones that if it rains are completely lethal. And above all, it's about how much corner cutting you can actually get away with.
This is Absolute Rally, Pace Notes Rally Magazine, Britain and Ireland's only dedicated rally publication. Rally news, interviews, features and reports from clubman rallies to the WRC. Available from all good news agents or subscribe at rallymag.com. Pace Notes Rally Magazine, your number one monthly rally read. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Now, Seb Marshall, Jack has wrote a little co-driver's eye piece on the preview that you guys have done for this week, this weekend. In fact, folks, if you've not got MN this week, go and get it. You can get it online now and everything, right? Because the piece is entitled, What Makes Ypres Rally So Special? Jack Bennion investigates. I didn't realise you were an investigative reporter as well, Jack.
very good. I do my best to highlight these things, but it's more mainly for your humour, my headlines.
No, absolutely not. This is important, Jack. This is important because you're going to be our man on the ground and everything else. As I say, Seb's been involved with it numerous times. Of course, they ran Course Car last year. Now, there's a couple of things I want to come to. For those of you who don't know, and I appreciate we have listeners all over the world, by the way, and we keep on kind of tongue-in-cheek talking about iconic events and things like that. Please, please, please check out some onboards of Ypres and you will get a grasp, I think, of some degree to what Ryan's just been talking about with regards to cuts and things like that. They can be two car widths, I think it's fair to say, isn't it?
Yeah, right? Absolutely. And you have to use them. You know, people say, well, you know, why do you need to cut the corner, or more the point, can you not stay on the tarmac? But the problem is people cut and then all the gravel and mud and whatever else that comes out of the fields on the inside is just dragged onto the road. So actually, if you're on the tarmac, it's incredibly slippy because it's like ball bearings on top of the surface. surface. So if there's a cut there, you have to take it, and sometimes you'll actually cause yourself more trouble by not taking the cut and then struggling to get around the corner or sliding off the road on the outside, because that's the other thing about Ypres. There's ditches, very much like Kielder sized ditches. It seems that if a car ends up on its side in a ditch, it's very, very difficult to get out. So you certainly use those to your advantage on the inside, but you don't want to be in one on the outside of the corner.
Jack Benyon, 19 stages, total stage mileage of 161.5 miles. It is described as asphalt, despite what Ryan's just been talking about there. Is it going to be easy for the BRC boys not to get sucked in and not to compare themselves with? Of course, you know, we've got WRC star Thierry Neuville there. We've got Kevin Abering, who was kind of on the cusp of being, having a lead role, perhaps at some time with Hyundai. He's out in a 208 T16. Are the BRC boys going to be able to keep themselves to themselves and just kind of focus on the job in hand, or are they going to get sucked into trying to battle these superstars?
It's a good question. I think we're going to see a very interesting event for both sets of crews, for both of the locals and the guys doing the Tour European Rally Series and for the British Championship sort of regulars. I think these guys are all competitive, aren't they? And they even if they are fighting for top points in the BRC, they won't want to be finishing sort of 10th, 11th, 12th. So they're going to be pushing. For me, the interesting one is Tom Cave, because he's kind of out of the running for the main championship unless something really goes wrong for the front sort of three or four. And he's sort of Thierry Neuville's unofficial teammate this weekend in an I-20 R5. So he's one who's not really got anything to lose and will want to prove himself against the likes of Thierry Neuville. So for me, the BRC runners, he's interesting. And so is Martin McCormack, who's done the event twice before. Friend of the show and a really nice guy. Everyone always likes to see do well, and Ypres is an event he's targeting as one he wants to at least sort of fight for maximum BRC points. So they're the two I think you need to watch in terms of overall leaderboard, and then the rest I think will settle into fighting for championship points, because that's what they've kind of got their eyes on.
Right, I think the tyre battle, I think, is probably intensifies more on tarmac now, doesn't it? We know the D-Max have been the gravel tyre to use. All our top boys have been using them. But certainly when it comes to tarmac, Marty, for instance, long established working with Kumho, and Kumho have worked really, really hard over the last 5 to 10 years of developing tarmac tyres on the Irish tarmac series and stuff like that. Marty has been one of their boys. Now, again, Kumho runner, a tarmac tyre that is a recognised working tarmac tyre, aside from the obvious choices in Michelin and Pirelli. Do you see this as a tyre war?
It certainly, like you said, it certainly intensifies on tarmac. Like you said, D-Mac have done huge amounts of development with their tyres now. They're working very nicely on gravel. We've seen them work very well on tarmac in last year's British Championship, for example. Elvin Evans was very quick on tarmac. So, they are now very competitive on tarmac also. But like you said, on this rally, we'll see Michelin, we'll see Pirelli, we'll see Kumho, as you just talked about. So that will certainly have an effect. If it's dry, then maybe not so much so. But if this rally is wet, it's incredibly tricky. And, maybe if it is wet, that could be when the tyres really spice things up. Interestingly enough, you mentioned Kumho there, and I remember being involved with a couple of drivers in the Irish Tarmac Championship, sort of going back 10 years ago now. And Kumho always had a very, very good compound when it was raining, and that was used to great effect by Eugene Donnelly a couple of times. And, he won a couple of wet rallies with their wet compound. So it certainly can throw an unpredictable into the mix.
I seem to remember as well, and it was when the WRC went there, and it was Niall McShay in the Proton Super 2 car, and I'm sure that was on Kumho's, and he absolutely battered everybody, and it was lashing down with rain. If anyone wants to be straight on that, by the way, by all means, but I'm pretty certain he was running on Kumho's. And as you say, Kumho, I've really, really kind of, a bit like the way there's an Irish tarmac setup now, folks. You can actually, if you go on Motorsport Auctions, which is one of our lovely, lovely sponsors, and you look at some of the older world cars for sale, especially the ones that have been over in Ireland, they'll always say there's an Irish tarmac setup with it. It's a very unique tarmac setup. Likewise, Kumho did something with their tyres, and that's why we're mentioning them anyway. But anyway, Jack Benyon, the juniors, I think, is going to be is equally fascinating, because again, I keep on coming back to cuts and things like that. There's a couple of juniors that have been there before, and there's many juniors that haven't. And I guess it is going to, whether the ones that have not been there before are going to be brave enough to put some of those cuts in their notes.
Yeah, it's, it's not just, as Ryan's already referred to, it's not just about being brave enough to put them in the notes. It's the people who try and take it too conservative. There's mud and dust and all that kind of stuff being pulled out onto the road. And then if you go wide, you understeer off into the ditches on the outside. So, it's a damned if you do, damned if you don't kind of thing for your first appearance in Ypres. It's really difficult to get it right. So, I think there's seven or eight of them who could potentially win, to be honest. And, it's absolutely really has enough trouble trying to predict who's going to win something, doesn't it, without needing eight or nine drivers in there with a chance to win. So trying to pick one out is basically impossible.
Absolutely, absolutely. But we're going to do it anyway. Ryan Champion, are you prepared to put your dangly bits on the table and say who you fancy? I don't mean in the literal sense, but who do you fancy to win Ypres, certainly in the BRC section anyway?
Oh, you see, you qualified it there at the end, didn't you? Because for the overall win, I think it'd be difficult to look past Thierry Neuville as long as the Hyundai remains reliable. Obviously, the i20 R5 is still a relatively new car, but there's actually five of them out, I think, this weekend. So that's got to be the first time I think there's been that many out on an event. I think Tom Cave's already shown that he'll go very, very well in that I-20. So I think he'll be very quick. I think Frederick Olin, I think it'll be a good battle. I'm going to put my money on Tom Cave as long as car's reliable and he keeps it on the road.
Jack Bengen?
I think Brian Boucher will win the event outright. He's been the closest person to Freddie Lux on pace in the last two rallies. Retired with gearbox failure last year, and the year before I think he was about 20 seconds behind in the end, which is quite incredible when you consider the rally's 160 odd miles and people are separated by 20 seconds, which is one of the things that makes Ypres so incredible. I'm going to go for it sounds strange saying that he's a dark horse to win the BRC event, but I think Keith Cronin is going to be the quickest guy in the BRC. We've talked a lot about Irish Tarmac Championship on the show, and he's the reigning Irish Tarmac Champion. Also in a up-to-date Evo 2 spec for Fiesta, which is has only gone on gravel in the WRC so far, but the upgrade seems to have worked and seems to be keeping the car competitive. I also think that it's almost impossible to pick a winner for the reasons that we've stated already, in the sense that it's so easy to go off, it's so easy to push too hard and make a mistake. I think Keith's going to pull it all together for a big event this time.
Okay, I am going to go. For a BRC win, I am going to go. I'm going to go Ossian Price, and I'm going to explain why. I'm going to qualify this. I'm going to qualify by the fact that he has been getting some tuition and some help with setup over there from the King of Ypres, which is Fast Freddy. Freddy Lux has been testing with him over the last 24 hours, I think it was. I think I've seen some images that Ossian had put up. I don't think there's anybody better that he could have got. And I think it was a very, very shrewd thing to do. And I genuinely don't know whether Freddy's going to be set with anybody else. I only know he sat with Ossian. And I think Ossian's quick enough. I think the car's quick enough. It's got the Evo 2 upgrade now. And he's getting just unique insight from the man who has absolutely dominated this. So that's where I'm going to go with
that. Did you see what happened to Osh after he got that insight from Mr. Lloyd yesterday?
No.
He had a bit of an indiscretion and did a bit of damage to the suspension on the car.
Okay.
But I think Ocean is well placed because he's a pro, and I think he's had crashes before and he'll bounce back. So sorry to interrupt you, Tony.
No, absolutely. I didn't see that, and it's always good to be corrected. I think
you're absolutely right with Osh, and I think Osh will go really well. But I think the difference between maybe Osh and Tom Cave, for example, is that Tom's got to win the rally. Like we said, he's maybe a long shot, really, for British Championship-wise, and I think Osh, if they're in a battle, Ossian will bank the points because he's still in a good chance of the British Championship, whereas I think Tom will be out for a win.
There you go. I'm not even going to try and dabble with the juniors.
Go on, Jack. Go on.
I'm going to go Callum Devine.
Good choice. I'll agree with you on that one. I think he's one of the only juniors. Well, he's the only junior that went last year, as far as I know, anyway.
I think Callum. Sorry to interrupt, because I'll qualify it as well, and you may go with this as well. I think Callum will be fine. And I think Callum will win, and that's with the greatest respect to all the other drivers, providing they don't get sucked in and he doesn't get sucked into battling with Chris Ingram.
Yeah, I think that'll be a problem for a few of the juniors this weekend. Chris is someone we haven't mentioned yet, isn't he? And someone he probably should be mentioned, because he's done it for many more times than any of the other juniors. So he's going to be one to watch this weekend, and his Let me say this without swearing. He's got to put himself on the line this weekend, hasn't he? Because there's going to be British juniors turning up to try and have a pop at the current European Junior Championship leader. So, you know, he's got a lot to lose in a way, Chris, hasn't he? So it's going to be an interesting rally to see how he approaches it. But, you know, it's purely sort of testing miles for him, isn't it, for the rest of the year? But going back to Callum, you know, he was one of the people who... He was conservative in places last year on Ypres, and you know, if you watch some of the onboard from the event, there was definitely stages where he wasn't conservative, because he was taking cuts as big as anyone. But on one of the stages, he was just a little bit too conservative and just did that thing that we talked about, where he just ran a little wide, got a bit of understeer, and went into a ditch and lost a really good result. But you know, that learning process from doing that last year will fare well for him this year, I think.
Absolutely, Ryan Champion, are you going to take a dabble at choosing a junior?
And like Jack just said, I think it's great for the juniors, the British juniors, to have Chris there. Funnily enough, I was messaging Chris backwards and forwards the other day, and he's really looking forward to the rally. And I think it was actually a little bit of a last minute deal to actually finalise everything for him, because it's an additional event to his programme. But you know, I think he'll go very well. Great for the British juniors to aim at that, and I'm going to hope that Cameron Davis continues his good run of form.
Yeah, me too. I was speaking to Cameron. We were hoping to get Cameron on from the recce this week on the podcast. We haven't quite managed to make it work, but yeah, good on Cameron, as I say, and all the crews out there. Have a safe run, guys, and as I say, hopefully we'll get the winner of when we come back for season 9 of Absolute Rally. We've got to the any other business section, boys. Now, who's going to go first? Jack Bennion?
I can go first if you like.
You go first, my friend.
Very short and sweet this week, because we've covered off everything that I think we need to cover off and that I could have had for any other business this week. So I've got a short and sweet one, but I can go if you like first.
It's okay. You can get pills for that. Go.
I wanted to point out that, you know, probably many people have seen this already, but David Richards, head of ProDrive, has been confirmed as the new chairman of the MSA starting on January 1st, 2018. Quite interested in the sense that the outgoing chairman, Alan Gow, who is also sort of the overseer of the British Touring Car Championship as well, didn't have much of a rally background and wasn't, you know, particularly interested in rallying, I don't think it's fair to say. So quite interesting a point in British rallying, where there's definitely a lack of direction from everyone, really, in the sense that the community is not quite pulling together in the way it should be over here. You know, David Richards coming in as a rally person, you know, world champion co-driver, and someone who's been involved in various different aspects of rallying, including promoting and things like that. I think it's really interesting to see him come in. I stop short of saying that this is, you know, brilliant for rallying until we actually see how much of a role David's going to have in the effect of how we move forward. But I think the one thing we can definitely say at the minute is that British rallying has got a lack of direction, and hopefully a rallying man coming in as chairman can really, if not direct things himself, at least have an input into how things move forward and how we kind of go about fixing some of the problems that face British rallying at the moment.
Right. Do you agree?
Definitely. You know, David Richards has done wonders for rallying in this country, hasn't he? You know, he made ultimately Colin McRae world champion. He made Richard Burns world champion one way or another. And, you know, he's through ProDrive done wonders for the sport, but then also as a promoter as well, as Jack just said. So he has a unique insight into the sport. You know, very, very clever man who's been very successful, all based, let's not forget, on a very successful co-driving career, you know, alongside the likes of Ari Vatanen. So great guy to have in that position.
There you go. I couldn't agree more. It's, as Jack said there, something needs to happen. And I just can't wait to see what he's going to bring in, because something definitely, certainly needs to happen in the not too distant future with regards to stage rallying in this country. Ryan Champion, you're
any other business links into what we were talking about a little bit earlier on into the Ypres rally. As we talked about, really, it is a classic rally. It is an iconic rally, if you want to use that phrase. Unusually, not a round of the European Championship, because it has been probably the biggest round of the European Rally Championship since records began. But it isn't this year. There is going to be, likely to be a new winner this year. It has been dominated by Freddie Loix, as you said. I mean, incredibly, an 11 times winner. He's only been beaten there twice in the last 9 years. Who was he beaten by?
Oh,
twice. Ooh. He's been beaten in the last 9 years.
Chris Meek
in 2009.
Juho
Hannanen. Yeah. Those two drivers, as obviously an IRC round at the time. And, we've talked about Juho many times on this show, but it shows, whilst Juho's having a difficult time at the minute, to go to somewhere like Ypres and beat Freddie Loix on home ground. He's a very talented driver. But, Loix always dominated the rally, but incredible history to the event. We saw Tony Pond go there and win it twice in a TR7 V8. Jimmy McRae won it in a Sierra Cosworth. We've seen a lot of the classic Belgians, that roll off the tongue, the Snyers, the Drugmans, the Thierrys, they've all won the rally. And an interesting little attempt by Colin McRae 1 year, wasn't there, Jack?
There was, yeah, absolutely. Well, not 1 year, it's more than one.
Well, one that you did a little bit of research on recently.
You put me on the spot now, aren't you? you give an insight into future MN features here, which I'm not comfortable with, to be honest. Now, Colin went over in the early 90s and put in a really stonking performance and finished fourth, didn't he? I think, did he have a puncture at the start of the event, or he was just a little bit off the pace compared to the regulars, like some of the guys you mentioned there already, the likes of Tabaton and Drugmans and people like that were kind of front runners. And I think it was a puncture, or he had a problem at the start of the event, but managed to work his way sort of back into contention in the second half. And what a livery, eh? Brilliant,
yeah,
brilliant.
It is.
Positive livery. And that was a car. It was a proper last minute deal, and they hadn't planned on going. But they managed to put a deal together to take the car that he won the Scottish Rally in. I think it was either a week before or 2 weeks before, and convert that car to tarmac ready to go over to the event. And it was done on a proper shoestring with Mike Little and RED. So yeah, it was quite an interesting rally, and interesting to know that McRae did it, because it's not something many people kind of talk about or know much about.
And I actually have the model on my desk in front of me. So it was a cool livery, like you said. And it was a rally that we saw a lot of Brits go over to. You know, the rallies always had fantastic sponsorship in the old days of the cigarette money. There was always a huge amount of promotion, thousands of spectators, a shakedown stage a long time before, it was ever seen in WRC. And Ypres has always been a forward-thinking rally. It's always had a cloverleaf format. It's always had central service in the town square, so you get all the trade stands and the razzmatazz around the rally, and they just have always created this fantastic, not just rally, it's an event that everybody gets involved with, the whole town get involved with. Even back in the day, used to get spectators on the recce, like thousands of spectators on the recce, and it's always been a very exciting event to go to, and long may that continue.
There you go. There you go. My end of the business seems to kind of fail, just drift away now. I was really, really quite excited because my end of the business this week was to thank one of our sponsors over the last this last season, which was the guys behind the Supercar and Rally Show, which happened last weekend, and we've got a new rally car. It's official now. We've got a new rally car.
Are you sharing it with Jack and I? I didn't realize. Jack, did you know that?
Can I just say, it's not official that you've got a new rally car until you've told the person who looks after National Rally at Motorsport News. And as far as I'm concerned, I've not seen any story in Motorsport News about anyone having a new rally car, so I've got no idea what you're talking about.
I haven't seen anything at all.
It's all right, Jack. It's yours. It's yours as well. He's sharing it.
Considering you knew 2 weeks ago that I bought it.
See, I did that respectful journalist thing where you wait until the person has got everything confirmed and all the deals done, and then wait for that person to say, yeah, you can talk about it now, and then do it. But, you know, maybe I'll just be one of those journalists who just prints it next time.
Jack, you can talk about it now.
Thanks, mate. There you go. Cheers.
There you go. So, so we finally got our hands on an R2, which has been really, really hard work. I'm very, very excited. And it was the first time I drove it at the weekend. And it just, compared to driving an ST, it feels like you're playing a computer game, which somewhat rounds up our show, or the beginning of our show, quite aptly this week, because we've just got Dirt 4 delivered to us. But it's a joy to drive a car with a sequential gearbox, I have to say. And I can't wait to start driving it properly. I might have to get some expert tuition, Jack Bengen.
Well, my champion's on the end of the line, so he's the right person to ask.
Yeah, I think that's, we might have to get Ryan champion. We may even do it as a feature.
If you want a polite co-driver, then Ryan will admit that I'm 100% better than him. But if you want driver tuition, right, then Ryan would be the person I would go to.
Yeah, I might have to ask him. I might have to ask him politely, but no, we got to drive it there and we did some stuff with some of our sponsors and stuff like that. And Bryn Moore and his people really did work very, very hard. And there was some serious kit there, by the way. We all love, and I think most people listening to this podcast love, the retro stuff. And there was, an F2 car there, the one the Simonite sisters used. There was, one of the Mitzi World cars there that no doubt Ryan Champion drove at some point. It was one of McRae's, Subarus was there as well. It was some proper kit, and there was us and our little R2 Fiesta buzzing around, and it was an absolute joy, and the weather was fantastic as well, which adds to these things. So well done, Bryn Moore, and the team behind that event. But that is my ending of the business for this week, and that's it for this section. Jack Bengen and Ryan Champion, we've got a little bit of a break now.
Oh, sad.
I'm interested to hear what Chris Rawls has got to say about the Cypress Rally, and it's an unwritten rule which I'm now confirming on air that you must refer to Chris Rawls by his full name at all times. You may never call him Chris or Rawls. It's always Chris Rawls.
It is Chris Rawls. Yeah. Absolutely. Which is why I introduced the piece with him as Chris Rawls.
Well, it'd been odd if you'd have introduced the piece to someone called Chris, wouldn't you?
Possibly.
This week on the show, especially if talking about the Cypress Rally, we've got Chris.
Well, it could be any Chris, to be fair. Exactly. It could be just Chris who works in the office next door. But Chris Rawls, of course, does the ERC radio coverage and stuff, so it made sense. Just saying, you know, just putting it out there. This bit's kind of just stumbled to an end, hasn't it, really? This section, I think it's fair to say. There you go. Jack, you've got a couple of weeks off. We might record something in the next 2 weeks, which we might put out. I'm working on a couple of things at the moment, but we are officially having 2 weeks off. And we do thank our sponsors for this season, which of course Pace Notes Rally Magazine. Without them, we wouldn't be here. Motorsport Auctions, who've come on board recently, thank you. The guys behind Supercar and Rally Show, thank you for allowing us to put this podcast together also. Jack, enjoy Ypres.
Thank you very much. Yeah, thanks to everyone who helps us put the podcast on, and looking forward to coming back in 2 weeks with maybe Ryan Champion and I will record something from Ypres and treat you all to that when we get back.
That would be good. Well, that's what I was hoping. Ryan Champion, enjoy your 2 weeks off, even though I know in this next 2 weeks you're going to Ypres and then going to Goodwood.
Yeah, and Jack, if we don't record something in Ypres, we can maybe do it in Goodwood.
Oh, now we can record me being really polite in Subaru if you like.
Well, we could maybe do that. So we'll have to see.
Please we'll do that.
Thanks, Ryan.
We'll try and get Jack Bengen in the Subaru at Goodwood. So yeah, busy couple of weeks. Pretty much straight back from Ypres and into preparation for Goodwood, and then looking forward to being down there the following week. So busy period. So good time to have a break from the podcast, but obviously it's we do like doing it weekly, and it'll be a shame to miss it. We'll feel like there's something missing from our week. But again, thanks to everybody who helps us behind the scenes with the podcast, and we'll be back soon.
Absolutely, folks. We'll be back after this little break. We've got Martin Holmes coming up, who's forthright as ever with his thoughts with regards to Chris Meek and Ypres and various other things that are going on. And always a pleasure to have him on the podcast. And then we'll finish, of course, with the Chris Rawls, as we're just making in reference to, covering Rally Cyprus that went on last weekend. And yeah, as I say, sit back, relax, enjoy the rest of the podcast.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast. Click motorsportauctions.com. Now, one of the world's leading motorsport
board, online classified adverts and auction sites. It's easy to use, providing listing platforms that enable you to sell race and rally cars, surplus parts, transporters, clothing, workshop and pit equipment. We specialise in cataloguing, listing and selling large quantities of motorsport related surplus and obsolete stock. Click motorsportauctions.com.
This is Absolute Rally.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally, and welcome back to Absolute Rally, a friend of the show, somebody we've had on many, many times, and a wealth of knowledge and information, Martin Holmes. Welcome back.
Hi.
Well, Martin, we had a great debate on last week's podcast, and myself, Ryan, Jack and Trevor Agnew, with regards to the situation that we find ourselves in with Chris Meek not competing in Poland for Citroen Racing. And I was just interested to get your thoughts perhaps on whether Citroen have gone down the particularly right route here by benching him for an event, or whether this is a good bit of man management.
Well, when we look at all the media that comes out from the British sources, I get the impression that people think he's been hard done by, and but then we're never quite sure when we read their stories why that should be, and whether the tale of misadventures he has experienced in the last year or two have been coincidental or in fact his fault. Now we wait to see whether time proves that missing Poland turns out to be a good thing or a wrong thing. But we're still, to my mind, we're still no further nearer finding out the reason why Chris has been having such a bad time.
Are we surprised the fact that the Citroen does appear to be a difficult animal to get used to? You know, Craig has done a very, very steady job. Andreas made references to the fact he perhaps had to change his driving style on the one event he's done in the car so far. Are we surprised by this? You know, Citroen have built some very, very successful cars, but this one definitely does seem to be an acquired taste, I think it's fair to say.
What we haven't really fully understood is what input Chris has had in the development of the C3WRC. We know, because it's been widely explained, that Chris has a position in the team, firstly, on account of his abilities as a driver, secondly, on account of his friendship with the sponsor, Sheikh Al-Qassimi, and thirdly, because of his use to the company as a development driver. Now, talking about the third aspect of that, if he is there on the invited to continue with Citroen on account of being a good development driver, why is he now unhappy with the way that the cars are performing? Is it that he's given bad advice to the company? Is it that he's given good advice to the company, but they ignore him? Really, what's going on? Now, I don't know the answers to that.
Yeah, I guess nobody really is. Do you understand the leaving out of the team of Chris? Because, you know, we debated it long and hard last week, and we made reference to the fact that I think it was either Trevor Agnew, I think it must have, who mentioned the fact, you know, for instance, Malcolm Wilson has always stuck by drivers until the end of the season, and then perhaps, you know, let them go of their own accord, or they've come out of contract, or whatever it may be. Do you understand in the mid-season benching of a driver?
I can imagine that there's a political undercurrent about all this. I can well see that the top brass have been putting out, get rid of the man immediately, and they're saying, hey, hold on, it's not so simple as that. The next rally after Poland was the one that he spectacularly won last year. So whether that's one of the aspects or not, I don't know.
Trevor made reference to the fact that, you know, his next event will be Finland. It will be an event which we all acknowledge he spectacularly won last year. If you're Chris Meek and you're on the start line of Finland, come 2017, having just missed Poland, what's your psyche? What's your mindset? You know, do you drive to finish? Do you drive to go and try and win the event? Which we think he's, you know, Chris is, he does have that attitude. He goes to win every event. You know, how would you perceive that he will take that challenge on?
Well, I don't think we have any input into the mind of Chris at all. And certainly, even those close to him, like co-drivers, other co-drivers have said they have no influence on Chris. They can't understand why he does certain things. There it is. He is his own master, and he doesn't explain to anybody what's going on, and it doesn't allow anybody to have a useful insight into what goes on.
Finland, obviously, is one that we all kind of look to and everything else. It'll be the first time we're going to have these 2017 cars there as well. The speed is going to increase and everything else. It sounds ridiculous. Would it be more advantageous to Chris to perhaps have a slower, more technical event, do you think, before he comes back? Or, you know, it's such a big thing to be let to miss a rally and then come back, you know, probably, you know, the fastest gravel rally in the calendar.
thinking forward to Finland and missing Poland, at least missing Poland will stop Chris having any chance to add any more points to his total. And of course, the more points he adds to the total, the worse the starting position he will have on a rally like Finland. But that's being cynical. I really don't know is the answer.
Well, we shall wait and see. So thank you for that. The other reason why, obviously, we always love to get you on is that we're now at the midway of the season, rather, and we kind of spoke after the first kind of three or four events and stuff. Has there been any surprises for you, Martin, so far?
Just how exciting everything has been in the World Championship this year. I mean, forget Meek and the curious tales that produces. The fact that all four teams are so equal, it's never happened like this before, especially when there's ever been any new formula or anything like that. I think this is one thing that we can take our hats off to the FIA for, making sure that the new formula is going to be something that is not only exciting, whether we need that or not, but also very, very equal. I think it's impressive. So that really is my main feeling about the championship so far, and there's every reason to think that will continue. I had suspected that at the beginning of the year that this might be the case, but the second phase in the development of the car, which is like once the car is up and running and reliable and everything like that, how to make it faster, that phase might be decided about which company is the most effective, efficient at developing the cars. But at the moment, no company is even indicating it's pulling away from any other company, except for the story of Citroen.
We had an interesting debate last week. Again, it was, are we doing any of the business section? And Trevor posed a question last week, and most of the boys sat on the fence. I quite happily kind of put my flag firmly in one particular team. He said, if you had to pick a team today that you would want to be in their car in Monte Carlo in 2018, what would it be? Now, I went with Toyota. I think Toyota is getting stronger and stronger. If we pose that to the great Martin Holmes, what overalls would you like to have on in Monte Carlo in 2018, based on what we know today?
Well, what we don't know today is whether there's any reality amongst the rumours or suspicions that Ford are thinking of further investing in M Sport. Now, if that happens, then M Sport obviously will have a chance to technically move up the ladder. But I don't know whether they have a chance or whether it's just media talking.
Do you see any advantage in Ford coming back, though? Because Malcolm's done such an amazing job. What you know, and everybody knows it's a Ford Fiesta. everybody appreciates, to the layman, Ford are involved in the World Rally Championship. So from a pitch point of view, and let's be honest, Malcolm Wilson is a genius when it comes to this stuff normally, but I think it's a very difficult pitch because I don't see what more Ford can possibly get out of it.
Just a moment. Get out of it or put into it? Which do you mean?
Well, a bit of both, I suppose. You know, what can Ford...
What they can put into it is a policy to adopt the car, the project, officially as their own. And that leads all the way down to product improvement, improving the product to make it more useful in competition. That is the way that official involvement matters, apart, of course, from money.
With regards to from the marketing point of view, though, do you see the potential in, you know, the great days of, you know, of obviously when they signed Colin and the Focus got released, you know, we had TV adverts featuring, you know, a supposed young Colin McRae and Colin McRae of today driving, you know, the new Ford Focus World Rally car. Do you see us going back to those days? Do we see potentially a Sebastian Ogier on our screens driving a Ford Fiesta?
Well, so long as let's say the buck stops with M Sport, if they've got to adopt a policy of developing a public image for Ford, which is not M Sport, on their own account, well, they're not going to do that. It's only if Ford take these things on for themselves can it happen. I mean, I know these stories about Ogier not wanting to continue with Ford unless, continuing with M Sport unless Ford supports the project further. I think that is just talk. But every driver at this time of the year is looking over their shoulder, seeing who else is in the frame. The only team which obviously is not being attractive to other drivers is, of course, Citroën.
Do you see, where do you say Andreas? Do you think Andreas will be in the car more than Poland at Citroën? Do you think he will remain in a Citroën for the rest of the year, or do you see this nomadic continuation of him driving other 2017 cars at some point?
No, I can't see him driving anybody else's cars. It has to be Citroën as the only option as I can see it. No other team is looking to increase their range of drivers or replace existing drivers, to my knowledge. Hyundai are extremely content with what they have. M Sport are doing everything that they possibly can, including Ogier. I can't see any other opportunity for Mikkelsen other than what he's getting out of Citroën, which may not be the best thing to do, but at least it keeps him in the frame.
We've mentioned him I feel like we've mentioned him on every episode, and you know, to be fair, he was you know, he had a great start to Sardinia, but you were Hannanen. You know, I think we've all kind of universally agreed we don't see perhaps Juho starting the 2018 season. You know, we think that seat will probably come up for grabs. Now, who do you see going in that, perhaps that direction?
Well, I mean, obviously, Lappi will move forward and replace Hannanen in the team. But in Toyota, they are obviously developing their new drivers with a purpose of one of them being a third driver. Hannanen is there because at the beginning of this season, he was the one that had the most input into the development, understanding of the car, and that is the reason why he's in the team. Happily, he's also proved to be a very good driver, that those circumstances allow. So I can't see that Toyota is an option.
Okay. Well, we will keep watching because you say it's very, very exciting. There's something else which an event I've been excited about, and I've yet to do it. Whether we do it next year or maybe in a year or two's time, I really, really don't know. But the next round of the Penistone MSA British Rally Championship, and also I nearly said it was a round of the ERC. Sadly, it's not. It's a round of the Belgian Rally Championship and the Celtic Cup. But it's Ypres this coming weekend, Martin, and it's an event which is. It's got so much, you know. We
you
talk.
Actually, mention TER.
TER.
Yeah.
The Celtic Cup.
No. The TER series.
The TER? No, I didn't.
You should have done.
Shame on me.
Yes, shame indeed. I still like it.
Yeah.
No, seriously. The whole basis about being dropped by the dropped for the European Championship comes from the initiative of the promoter of the Ypres Rally. The TER is an international six-round series, which started as a four-round series last year and continues into the second series. And it's offering a lot of things which the European Championship did not. Now, as you probably know, the promoter of Ypres is the team manager of Hyundai. So we see a lot of him and understand a lot of things that go through his mind. And for a long time, like for at least a year, his opinion about the European Championship is that it has a very bad business model. It's like take your money and run. But then, on the other hand, with the TER, it's aiming at a little bit different market. You know, it's the Tour European Rally Series. And the areas where the championship is now going have a lot of tourism opportunities to boot. Now, when they decided to move out of the European Championship, I think it was quite a slap in the face for the European Championship promoters, Eurosport Events. But it happened, and they hadn't caved in under this. They hadn't sort of renegotiated. They've just found other events to fill in the space. With the European Championship in Ypres, they had a most appalling entry of championship drivers last year in Ypres. It was like almost all the drivers to a man, decided that no point in going to Ypres. It's such a highly competitive thing. I won't get a good result from that event. Well, anyway, all that's happened, they left the European Championship, and there's a qualifying event in the TER as well. That said, I hope you understand a little bit about TER, and you will be allowed to talk about it future. But no, going back to the British Championship, which is obviously in your mind and my mind as much as anything else, the opportunity of going abroad for the first time. Well, for the first time. Remember, the circuit always went to the Republic of Ireland, but first time in mainland Europe, anyway, is exciting for the drivers. And it's a good choice because of all the rallies in mainland Europe of consequence, maybe including the, as an exception, Touquet rallies, probably even closer. Ypres is wonderfully accessible to the British Championship drivers, and of course is really neat because now that we've lost the long lamented what was to become the Dorset Rally, it's the only opportunity that drivers in the championship have to compete in the south part of England. So I'm really pleased the way, and also I'm delighted that I checked up the other day. Certainly, of the top 10 standing drivers in the MSA Championship, all of them have entered Ypres, which is really exciting.
Are we, I don't know how close you've been following the British Championship this year, Martin. It's obviously it's dominated by R5 cars, of course, as most, you know, national regional championships are these days. But we've got Freddie Arlin, and then we've got Ossian Price and David Bogie and Marty McCormack and Tom Cave, of course, with the high end eye, and then we come to Keith Cronin. And again, I feel like we cover old ground, but I've spoke to the other boys about this as well. I'm still kind of shocked that we've got this three times British champion who is no longer kind of, or certainly as the season's gone on, is no longer considered to be at the forefront of the British Rally Championship, and also going to places, you know, like Ypres. I think Keith may have been there before a few years ago. I'm not entirely sure whether he did it as an IRC round or not, but I still find it staggering that we've got this three times British champion now that perhaps isn't being considered for BRC wins.
Well, time moves on, doesn't it?
Yeah, I suppose it does. But I think he was going to be the big hope, certainly this year, for obviously the M Sport team and everything else entering into the British Rally Championship, and they came in with Keith. But I would really like him to mix it up. And obviously it's an easy thing to say, the fact that he's Irish and everything else, and you know we want him to go well on tarmac. But my outside bet, and I'm slightly biased because I know him quite well, but I think Marty McCormack is going to be absolutely on it. He's got the R5 car this year. He only had a Super 2 car last year. And I just hope we get a mix-up. I think, you know, it'll be good to see it mixed up, obviously, with the locals as well. And it give our drivers in the British Rally Championship a really, really good kind of standing, because as you correctly pointed out before, you know, there was a lot of ERC drivers that chose not to go to Ypres last year because it was deemed to be a place where you couldn't go and score good points because of the local drivers. So I think it's going to be fascinating to see where our drivers end up.
Yes, I agree. Yeah, but certainly they don't have the heavy brigade from the European Championship to fight against.
Very true, very true. But as I say, we're going to have one of the drivers coming up from the junior section a little bit later on the podcast, who's going to join us from the recce. So we're going to get a feel for the stages, because that's one thing which I don't think we can ever truly paint a picture, you know, that invariably we've seen the photographs, and I'm sure you've probably took some photographs as well, Marcy, of purely the cuts that can be taken over there, where you're talking car, you know, a car width, two car widths. And yeah, you know, I think it's got this, it's a very, very unique event in its own right.
Well, certainly it's one of these events where you get better and better and better the more often you do it. And the wonderful parade of victories that Freddie Leutz has had in Ypres are no coincidence that he could do that in Ypres. Ypres has, I remember from the days when we used to compete in Ypres, it has its own characteristic, and you can't sort of just go in there cold and expect to do well. I mean, the only sort of people that have ever gone cold to Ypres and done well have usually been cars which are specially performant. You know, remember when the TR8 went there and things like that. But that doesn't happen very much these days. Cars are all very equal.
I will be watching with bated breath. Are you gonna try and watch the stage times coming in, Martin?
Yes, I was going to Ypres on the Friday. And,
okay.
Let me say, it's certainly closer to my home than any British Championship really is these days.
Wow. Wow.
It's a day out. I go and leave home at crack of dawn on the Friday at daylight. By the time I get back to Calais for the train to come home, it's just turning dark. It's a lovely midsummer day out. And, of course, Ypres is a great place if you like chips. On the corner of the main square, there's the fabulous ice cream shop, which I try to go to every year, and usually spill everything down in the heat, down the clothes I'm wearing. But it is a very, very good place to meet people, and they're good fun people. Even though.
Fantastic. Well, listen, you have a fantastic time out in Ypres. Have an ice cream for us, and we'll catch up and get you on again soon, okay?
Thank you very much, and good luck.
Thanks, Martin. Thanks for your time. Martin Holmes, folks. And, you know, you can get in contact with us as well. If you want to raise any points that we've been talking about, it's @Absolute_Rally on Twitter or facebook.com/Absolute Rally. We'll be back after this little break.
This is Absolute Rally, Pace Notes Rally Magazine, Britain and Ireland's only dedicated rally publication. Rally news, interviews, features and reports from clubman rallies to the WRC. Available from all good newsagents or subscribe at rallymag.com. Pace Notes Rally Magazine, your number one monthly rally read. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Welcome back to the final section of Absolute Rally. And you know, we do like to spread our wings, and we've done bits and pieces. Normally, we've had Chris Ingram on talking about the ERC Juniors, but wasn't around for him this weekend, or rather last weekend, on Rally Cyprus. So we thought we'd get a man who was out there, stage end, getting sunburned, and probably not putting enough sun cream on, but certainly enjoying the lavish fish dishes that certainly I was enjoying about Iron Appa the weekend before that I was there anyway. But Chris Rawls, of course, who does ERC Radio. Chris, welcome back to Absolute Rally.
Thanks very much for having me along, Tony. It's really nice to know that if you've gone through your speed dial, of it's either Chris Ingram, and if he's not available, then you're going to go with Chris Rawls instead. So, yeah, I feel honoured that I'm seconding it, second down the line.
Well, he wasn't there. He wasn't there. So,
but no, he's cool.
I'm gutted because genuinely, I've still got it in my head of it probably stems back to the IRC calendar, to be honest with you.
Yes, from
back in the day where Cyprus was always at the end. And genuinely, I was out there the week before and I didn't realise I could have possibly pushed my holiday a week further forward without telling my missus, and I could have got to watch Rally Cyprus as well.
You should have given me a shout, because you could have come and been a bit of an ERC radio reporter for us out in the stages. It would have been nice to have you along, Tony. You know, get you a bit pink and crispy in the Cypriot sunshine, you know.
Trust me, I did that the week before, but I would have loved to have come over. Maybe another time, certainly. Maybe another time. But, you know, it's obviously where we are now with ERC. There was, I'll be honest with you, I was kind of following it online, listening to a little bit of the radio, and I read some of the reports as well. Now, I always assume our listeners know what's happened on an event. Nationality, of course, won it. I wasn't aware that NASA was going to come out full time this year. NASA's always got this thing, and he's now surpassed it. Of course, he's now got more wins on Cyprus than Sebastian Loeb. Was it just a one-off outing for NASA, or what's his plans?
It was NASA. He loves rallying, doesn't he? Yeah, he won it four times before. Seb Loeb had also won it four times prior to that. So between them, it was who's going to win it. NASA is very interested in the ERC at the moment. And he was out in Greece on the Acropolis rally, so 2 weeks prior to Cyprus. So we started the ERC season off over with the Azores, classic one. And so two island events, the Azores and then Canaries, and then we've gone to Acropolis linked with Cyprus. So logistically, we've got the ferry boat that goes from Greece to Cyprus, and it makes sense for the competitors to shove all their stuff on the ferry to move it across to Cyprus. Cyprus was the final round of the ERC season last October, so it seemed quite quick that we were back here again this year in June. And pretty hot. But NASA, just going off topic there for a moment. NASA, was out in Acropolis rally, but had to retire on leg two due to power steering issues with his car. He couldn't actually reset the car and get the power steering working properly for the last two sections of the rally. And the last stage of Acropolis was like 35 point something kilometers in length, a real tough one. So he elected to drive it back to the service park, even though he was sort of on sort of song for a win there. And so he gave up there. But in Cyprus, it all went pretty well. But that was because most of the ERC competitors all had problems, and he was soldiering away at the front.
I was going to ask you about this, because I don't know whether you were at stage end where this thing happened on the Saturday, which is very unique. I'm going to let you tell the story, but something very unique happened on one stage, didn't it?
Yeah, stage six. So we had the usual troubles that people get in Cyprus. You know, wheels punctured. this, that, and the other. We had a couple of electrical gremlins and the usual bits from the cars being bounced around so much. But stage number six, Saturday afternoon, we had three of our ERC front runners slide off the stage. First of all, two-time ERC champion Kajetan Kajetanovic, just on a right-hander on a very rough stage, which we haven't used before. Yeah, so he just slipped off and down the bank, but literally like you were sledging. So just slipped off the road, down a gravelly bit, zoop, into the ravine at the bottom. Murat Bastanci is a Turkish driver, and so he was in an R2 last year, but is in an R5 this year, and he came along round the corner. But now, I'm not going to point the finger of blame here, but Yannick Baron, Kaito's co-driver, crawled up the ravine and onto the road and was standing sort of down before the junction with the OK board. So to obviously denote that they're both OK. But because Murat hadn't seen where the car was, momentarily put him off his concentration on the right-hander, and he did exactly the same and slipped down the bank and parked it perfectly next to Kaito. Job done, you think. So that was all good. And you can hear more on the onboard cameras, just like, what's going on here as they're sliding down the hill? Then ERC championship leader, Bruno Magalhães, he's whizzing along quite happy in his C-Jets sponsored Skoda R5. Again, sees Jarek and put off again. Slightly, and then on the right-hander goes sort of broadside then and slips off down the side of the road, but then rolls and rolls over Morat's R5. So you're missing Kaito and both competitors and co-drivers and everything all at the same time. It ended up on his roof at the bottom of the ravine. So that was stage number six. It was a complete and utter mess. When it was run earlier in the morning as stage two, there was one of the local competitors in a Mitsubishi Evo, I think, and they'd slipped and blocked the stage. So the drivers hadn't actually run through that stage at competition speeds. So bit of an interesting stage, should we say?
Yeah, I was going to say, because it was a game changer, of course, because you look at the winning margin, of course, from NASA. NASA was 6 minutes up on the guys. You know, to be fair, it's second, third, fourth are all Evo 9s. You know, you just think, these perennial Evos, how long are they going to last for? Because I must admit, I thought that homologation was up on them now. I was talking to, God, it must have been Tony Jardine, not last year, the year before, when we were both on GB together, and he's ran an Evo 9 on GB for the last few years. And, I know they were trying to get an extension on it, but I still always find it very surprising that an Evo 9 is still competing on international rallies like this, but let alone these tough events. The Group N cars seem to be able to probably stand up to it a little bit more than, dare I say, in inverted commas, the kit style cars.
Yeah, they seem to be bomb proof, and in Cyprus the Mitsubishi certainly dominate on that surface. I don't know why. They haven't got the long suspension travel and all the fancy upgrades and so on, but they just seem to be bomb proof. And in Cyprus there are a lot of them competing there that are right hand drive, which completely confuses us at the end of the stages when normally you just here comes in, pop the door open, and you're talking to the co-driver, so you have to whiz around the other side of it. But they seem to hold together pretty well. And they just dominate on that surface, where all the other, as you say, the fancy ones, they just seem to have occasional issues here, there, and everywhere. But at the end, just to finish up on the stage six story, late at night, they dragged the cars out. They got Kaito's car out perfectly well. So that was all good. And so he restarted, no damage to him. But the other two, the roll cages were broke or damaged in Morat's R5 Fiesta and Bruno's R5 Skoda. So they were unfortunately out for the count. Another Skoda that suffered problems that we had in Greece last time out was the young lad Nikolai Gryazin, who's only 19 and super quick. His R5 burst into flames on a road section due to an expansion pipe for the fuel tank just rubbing. His car burst into flames, completely destroyed in Greece. So SRT actually had a spare car. SRT who prepared the car in Latvia had a spare car in Italy, which they actually shipped over to Cyprus so Nikolai could carry on. And then he had odd. He just basically hoovered up a whole load of dust in one of the corners on stage five, overheating, all sorts of problems, cleared it out, limped it home through stage number six, and then for some reason his car was locked in second gear at the end of stage six, so was so that was his day over and done with. So stage six was unlucky for some. It's my lucky number, but not for everybody else.
It's basically just the rally just kind of just, I think it was almost done and dusted on stage six. He probably could have just wrapped it up there and yes, everyone went home. When you kind of look at the time differences and stuff like that, but just obviously moving on, looking at I'll be honest with you, I'm really, really pleased to see Bruno Magalhães back, because it takes me back to IRC. I always think of him in a Peugeot these days. Of course, he's in the Skoda R5. He's currently leading the championship, which has been quite refreshing, really, because, you know, Kaito, as you say, you know, twice ARC champion in the in the Fiesta R5, of course, but Bruno Magalhães in the Skoda R5. Skoda yet again now starting to have a little look at ERC perhaps, and you know, certainly put the flag down there after Ford's dominating for the last few years.
Yeah, there's a number of R5s, you know, for these privateers in Europe, the R5 Fiestas, there are a fair few R5 Skodas knocking around as well. Bruno's got 93 points in the championship after four rounds. We've got a gap now of about 5 weeks before we head to Poland to rally Rzeszów and onto tarmac. It's good to see Bruno back. And originally, though, he was just going to do one round in the Azores opening the season, and that was all his plan was. He won that one, so then he got a little bit of budget together to compete in Canaries, not too far away, and did well there. So all good. He had no kilometres of testing in the car prior to Canaries, and so he had never driven it on tarmac before. Then, because he was doing so well after round two, we scraped and persuaded various people to come up with a bit of budget, and he arrived in Acropolis Rally. Good there. But his budget was just so down that when you've got the likes of Katanovic, who is in essence a privateer, backed by Lotus from Poland. So you've got everyone else in the service park with all their big awnings and, you know, catering areas and all that kind of stuff. Bruno has got a car and a car transporter and a van. And when the car's in service, they're sat in the car transporter or the trailer, you know, with the lid popped up on it, and they've got their tables and chairs sat in there watching their onboards. They didn't have any budget for a decent recce car with tyres on it, you know, gravel tyres. So they had to use the rental car in Greece. And then the problem was he couldn't ascertain where the braking points were, and thus the pace notes were all out of sync. So Hugo, who is no relation to Bruno, is, even though they share the same surname, he was then correcting the pace notes through the first loop and then watching the onboards in the service and then going out again and hoping to improve on the second loop. But the car was struggling with problems on it in Greece, and he couldn't tell what gear he was in. He just had a fault code on the dashboard, couldn't tell what gear he was in. He had a water temperature alarm even though the car wasn't overheating, so then it went into sort of lockdown into safe mode to preserve the engine even though it was an electrical gremlin. No windscreen wipers, which was an issue on the penultimate stage of the rally, which had a massive water splash, which was blocked up by the spectators obviously wanting, you know, a slightly deeper water splash. So then he lost 14 seconds waiting for some spectators to come over and clean all the rubbish off the windscreen because his windscreen wipers weren't working. Wow. The end of it, the car was running okay in Cyprus because it was the ECU. So they changed the engine ECU over, and that seemed to cure the problem until he slipped off the road and then bent the roll cage, and that was that. So, ERC. Plenty of drama in it.
I'm so glad, by the way, you pronounced the next round of ERC for me, because I was just looking at the calendar and I was thinking, should I attempt this or should I not?
Come on. Yeah, it's easy. It looks really weird spelt, doesn't it? But it is Rally Rzeszów Rally Rzeszów. Yeah, Rzeszów. Rzeszowski. Rzeszów is a really nice town, actually. We went there for the first time last year. It's similar to a Barum rally, Czech Rally Zlin. It's sort of bumpy tarmac in places. Last year, it was a really good event, and we were mightily impressed by it. lovely town, southeast of the country. It's about an hour's flight from Warsaw. But spot on. Last year we were up to 30 degrees Celsius, wall-to-wall sunshine for leg one. Leg two is actually chucking it down with rain and cloudy and about 15 degrees. It was amazing, the change in the weather overnight. Rally Rzeszów. And then on to Barham Rally after that.
Are the juniors, when are the juniors back in?
Juniors are back in next four rounds. So they're in Rzeszów, which is good. Then they're in Barham too. Then they're in Italy and also Lipaja as well. Final round of the season.
Fantastic. Well, listen, let's have a catch up after Rally Rzeszów. There you go. I've been brave and said it.
Hopefully, if you can pronounce it correctly, I'll come back on and give you an update after that. But ERC, follow it, FIAERC.com. It's great.
Fantastic. Right, folks, you know where we live. It's Absolute_Rally. Of course, on Twitter, it's facebook.com/Absolute Rally. Of course, you can log on to the website, listen to old episodes, absoluterally.co.uk, and all the old episodes are there. Thank you for the download. We are, of course, on our 2-week break now. If you miss us, please let us know. And you never know, we might even have a bonus episode, missing 2 weeks. I just can't help myself, can I? But thanks for the download, folks.